not on the sermon topic, but you know, you sing a song for years, and then something you notice. Well, you know, I did a sermon a couple weeks ago on Christ praying for us. That was kind of a new point for me, a new aspect of my faith in thinking about that. Well, we just sang that. I've been singing that for a long time. I know that my Redeemer lives and ever prays for me. This morning, though, we're going to continue in the book of James. And I keep on saying that I keep on working through the book of James across the book, but I'm trying also to show how the different themes that we see are really across the book as well. And so if you want to see what James says about speech, like in James 3, you really don't just look at chapter 3. You really look at the whole book in light of what he says there and realize he's been talking about speech throughout the whole thing. James 2, verse 12, I noted last time, says, "So speak and so act as those who are to be judged under the law of liberty." I noted how the book then breaks up those two points in the next sections. After 2:14, it's saying, "So here's how you act as one who's being judged." And then chapter 3, "And so here's how you speak as one who is being judged." So speak and so act as those who are to be judged under the law of liberty. And if you've watched a fair share of crime shows, you know the Miranda rights. You have the right to remain silent. I don't know, it reminded me of that. Speak as one who's going to be judged. You have a right to remain silent. If you do say anything, it can be used against you in court of law. I guess there's a theological truth there. Hopefully you know that from watching crime shows and not from being arrested all the time. I remember this wisdom from my father as a child. It's funny what things you remember. This morning I remembered him telling me, you're not supposed to turn on electronics right after you turn them off. I don't think it's true necessarily anymore, but I still do it. So, but I remember him telling me as a child, you know, if you're ever interrogated by an officer, that you just don't answer questions because, you know, you... I didn't check this memory with him before this sermon. You never know how they can twist your words. You never know. They can make you say things you didn't mean to say. I don't know. After 30 years, I haven't used that a ton, but it's still there in the back of my head. But really, this is just Thumper Wisdom. I think that's the character's name. If you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. Come on, I'm not losing anyone with that, right? That's everyone's in that age bracket. We've all been watching that. If you can't say something nice, don't say nothing at all. A big part of what James is saying is right along those lines, though I think James goes further than that. I thought about, in all my sermons on James, always just including stuff from the Proverbs, because there's a lot of echoing of the Proverbs in the book of James, but especially when James talks about speech and some of the imagery he uses. So I've included some of those in this lesson. Proverbs 12:6 says, "The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood." And that's just representative of a lot the Proverbs say about the horrible effects that the tongue, our speech, our words can have. So let's read James 3, verses 1 through 2. We'll be reading further than that with this lesson, but for now, James 3, verses 1 and 2. "Not many of you should become teachers, my brothers, for you know that we who teach will be judged with greater strictness, for we all stumble in many ways. And if anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able also to bridle his whole body." To a community of Christians scattered in different areas, he says, don't all rush to be teachers. You know, there are places where they're encouraged to be teachers. There's places where, hey, someone desires to be an overseer, an elder, which is a teacher in a more official role of shepherding people. It's a good thing to desire that. But here is a warning. Don't just rush. Don't let many of you become teachers. Don't just rush to be teachers. And we all need warnings about how we speak, But of course, anyone who has an amplified voice needs this warning all the more. And obviously, the one talking to you right now particularly needs this warning. But of course, we have elders who are fundamentally teachers. We have Bible class teachers every Sunday, Wednesday. We've got other additional roles, both in things that are overtly spiritual, but other roles as well where we have a role in influencing people with our words. And so we need to heed this in light of those roles, in light of those positions we find ourselves in. Hey, there's some caution here that James is giving us. Let not many of you become teachers. We're going to have a stricter judgment. Try to keep up here. We're going to be judged. And if we're talking a lot, we're going to be judged even more in the influence that we have there. Sometimes there are situations that maybe you didn't have a voice, and suddenly you find that you do have a voice. And maybe you hadn't prepared yourself for the responsibility there. There's some kind of power shift at work, in the family, in a congregation, and what you do with that voice can stir a lot of trouble for years. So we take care with our voices, especially when they are amplified voices. Remember, as a child, maybe it was around 10 or so, and we were at someone's house who had these massive ATVs, these four-wheelers, bigger than anything I had driven as far as those kinds of things go. And my dad got on, and my little brother got on, who's 4 years younger than me, and he sat in front, my dad sat, and then I was hanging out in the back. And I remember everything was going fine. I had full confidence in my dad's ability there. And then my dad decided, hey, Joseph might like to try to mess with the throttle. They got this little thumb there with four-wheelers. And so he lets Joseph try the throttle out. And Joseph gives it some gas and is startled by the effect of that. And what do you do when you're startled? You just grip. And so I'm sure it was not as bad as in my memory, but I imagine us doing a wheelie. I don't think we probably did, but it felt like this. You know, the thing goes like this, and I'm like, ah! And suddenly I'm noticing that we're all the obstacles that were around in the gravel, and it felt like a long time. I'm sure my dad quickly gained control, but he was given this sudden authority over something that he had no idea. I think sometimes we don't realize the effects of our words and the effect and the power that can be had from those words. And so like a five-year-old with the throttle, we can be caught off guard by the power that we could wield there. And so earlier in James 1, verse 19, he said, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." Slow to speak, slow to anger. Anger can be a discussion accelerator, an argument accelerator. We are riled up about this, and we've got to deal with it now, and we've got to address misunderstandings now, and without stopping and thinking, we need to slow down. It's hard to talk about the tongue and not also talk about the keyboard or whatever that we call it on our device. Some of us need this regularly on social media. It's been around a while now. I mean, it's a big part of society and a lot of people's lives. How much effort does it take to check the typos, right? When you're replying to a text or replying to a post somewhere, how much time, and then you miss some of them, right? The typos. Well, how much more effort should go into checking the errors of attitude that we can have? And you're going to miss some, even when you're taking care. The thing about social media, too, is that we are interacting with people, but we don't see the majority of the people we're actually interacting with. we might be talking to someone whose face and name is there, but 100 other people could be viewing that as well. And the impact of our words may be more than we can handle and more than we prepared for or gave thought for. So do check those things and pray over those things. Slow down. We're going to be judged. We're going to be judged with our words, and the more we multiply our words, the more care we should take. The other thing that James gets into here is that untamed or wild words can bring unexpected harm. James 3, verses 3 through 8, continuing. After talking about a person who can bridle his tongue, control his tongue. Verse 3, if we put bits into the mouths of horses so that they obey us, we guide their whole bodies as well. Look at the ships also. Though they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are guided by a very small rudder wherever the will of the pilot directs. So also the tongue is a small member, yet it boasts of great things. How great a forest is set ablaze by such a small fire. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and sea creature can be tamed and has been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. Multiplies metaphors here, and they're clear, aren't they? The power of our words is greater than it would seem. A bit and bridle can harness the power of a creature five times your size. It's a powerful image. A rudder, out of sight, relatively small, directs a ship at the pilot's will. James points to some images that are more overtly destructive, and you know, you read a text multiple times and thinking about it and preparing a lesson, and then all of a sudden you're reading it up here and you're like, oh, tongues. In the language, tongues is, I knew this, but I didn't think about it with this passage before. Tongues is a word you can use for fire, so just occurred to me now. And I'm saying that because I know that's right. But so an easy illustration to come to. A tongue is like a spark in a forest here. Last summer, I did what we always do, and we go up to, my family goes up to Minnesota and camps, and usually the fire risk is low, but that time around, it was like it's never been ever since our time going there for some 20 years. And the fire marshal of the county next door showed up at our private property to make it clear to us when we showed up, hey, no open fires, no campfires, at all. Well, it rained a little bit, and so we thought, hey, now this is allowed. Someone else didn't seem to think so we were called upon again. The warning was made more clear to us. That was a drop in the bucket. That was nothing. You don't start any fires. And we put all our fires out, we left. But in the coming weeks, there were forest fires for lightning strikes and things spreading throughout that region. My brother lives up in Duluth in that area, and smoke was filling the air in Superior, Lake Superior. It's just this vivid image. Just a spark can set the whole thing on fire. Proverbs 16:27 says, a worthless man plots evil, and his speech is like a scorching fire. It's true to life. Some of you doesn't take any work to think about ways in which you've seen this work out. Of course, I hope you don't have to see the ways those things can work out. But we take care. What extreme language here? Verse 6. And the tongue is a fire, a world of unrighteousness. The tongue is set among our members, staining the whole body, setting on fire the entire course of life, and set on fire by hell. How many times do you think the word hell occurs in the New Testament? It's only in the New Testament. Just 12 times. You know, there's other words used to talk about what hell is, but it's only used 12 times, mostly out of the words out of Jesus' mouth. James says, this is the word that I need to include here to describe just how horrible and sinful and evil the tongue can be. And it's not a stretch. Our sinful words, are a conduit for evil. I always remember a brother who was teaching a Bible class when I was young, and he was teaching us James. And I particularly remember because there were other kids who, their habit after being there for years, I guess, was not really to listen to the teacher, and I was the only one like looking at him, and so he just make eye contact with me the whole time. But I remember that he wasn't just teaching us a Bible lesson, because he was teaching us James, talking about the tongue, and he invoked his own life and his own past divorce, and he pointed to his own failures with his words to try to impress upon this kid how important and how powerful the tongue can be. We need a warning that will make us pause, that will wake us up. They're just words. When we've hurt people with our words, the problem is we don't always feel like that. That was really what we did. The people who feel it are the people who are hurt, not the people who said it. Usually, the emotion of recognizing that you've hurt people isn't a natural thing. Sometimes I need someone to show me my own red flags, the kinds of things I could see in other people, but I don't see in myself. And sometimes to show someone the effects of the shots they fired, you're going to have to explain to them and highlight for them the dead bodies they've left behind. The saying goes, sticks and stones can hurt my bones, but words will never hurt me. And that, I think, is a handy tool for a kid who is coping with hurtful words. It is not a saying for the one delivering the hurtful words. Sticks and stones, right? Get over it. I, in my own mindset growing up, is a virtue to be able to take it. And it was a horrible flaw to not be able to take it. And if someone wasn't taking it, it was their problem, not yours. James is saying that's not right. Words are a flaming fire set on fire by hell. Let's continue to read James 3, verses 9 through 12. With it, the tongue, we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. From the same mouth come both blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth from the same opening both fresh and salt water? Can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. Words reveal a hypocrite. And here's where you see, again, those themes we've touched on before, reaching across the book here, as he talks about the inconsistencies that we have in our lives. You know, there's places in James where our words are contradicting our works, and James is saying, well, your works need to get in line. But someone said very concisely, words are also works in the book of James. And all he's getting at is our words also need to be consistent with our faith. Our words also can show the genuineness or not of our faith. So our words, in that sense, are also works. You know, people say, I know what I said, but that's not me. Can a fig tree produce olives? Does a spring of fresh water produce salt? Or can a salt pond produce... you're going to get fresh water out of the Dead Sea? Apparently, that is you. Our words really do, whether typed or spoken or thought, our words really do communicate who we are. And we need to be able to see those. Elsewhere in James, he talks about slander and gossip. And I'm thinking about on the line of thought of you bless God, but you curse people who are made in God's image. So James 4, verse 11. Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge. He was able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? If I speak evil about others, I'm disregarding God's law that teaches me not to slander and to gossip. I'm putting myself above God's law. And of course, I'll be judged for that. I suspect that most all slander and gossip is said with good intention. It's said with the belief that this is really coming from a good place. This is really out of concern for people or to help something along. Not always. Sometimes people know exactly what they're doing. And obviously you can talk about the evil of somebody else with love, with sincerity, and it not be wrong. But, you know, let's be slow to speak. We need to take care. What you say about somebody, especially if the people who hear you who respect you and trust you, what you say about somebody, even if it wasn't even a big deal to you, if you cast someone in a negative light, that can stay with them for years and affect how that person deals with the other, affect that relationship for years. It can give a lasting impression. So we need to take care. Chapter 5, verse 9. Again, do not grumble against one another, brothers, that you may not be judged. Behold, the judge is standing at the door. We can't be religious people always blessing God and then cursing people made in his image. Just some more Proverbs to share here. Proverbs 10, verse 11. The mouth of the righteous is a fountain of life, but the mouth of the wicked conceals violence. It's that imagery of the fountain there. Proverbs 26, verse 22. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels that go down into the inner parts of the body. Proverbs 11, verse 9. With his mouth the godless man destroys his neighbor, but by knowledge the righteous are delivered. I could end the sermon here, and in a way, this is what James 3, in the first several verses, is where it leaves us. All the bad news here. We're going to be judged for our speech, and man, it's so easy to sin and stumble. We all stumble, and if anyone doesn't stumble, they've been perfected. That word there is the word he's been using since James, since the first chapter, that if we endure trials, we become perfect. Complete, lacking in nothing, with maturity there that James is going for. Man, if you can bridle the tongue, you can be mature, but the truth is we all stumble. And the effects of that are far-reaching, and we can cause so much destruction, and it can show really what's going on in our hearts. and we might really just be hypocrites. But that is not where the book of James as a whole leaves us. He shows us the good that wise words can do as we follow Christ, who is redeeming us and transforming us. And so I want to just skip ahead to chapter 5, verses 12 through 20, to just notice a string of blessed speech, of the tongue being used in needful ways, so that we can't just walk away and say, oh, just don't speak, and then we're good. There's an urgency to actually use our tongues in specifically wise, faithful ways. So James 5, verse 12. First starts with a negative, but above all, my brothers, do not swear either by heaven or by earth or by any other oath, but let your yes be yes and your no be no, so that you may not fall under condemnation. Is anyone among you suffering? Let him pray. Is anyone cheerful? Let him sing praise. Is anyone among you sick? Let him call for the elders of the church and let them pray over him, anointing him with oil in the name of the Lord. And the prayer of faith will save the one who is sick, and the Lord will raise him up. If he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person has great power as it is working. Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, and he prayed fervently that it might not rain. And for 3 years and 6 months, it did not rain on the earth. Then he prayed again, and heaven gave rain, and the earth bore its fruit. My brothers, if anyone among you wanders from the truth and someone brings him back, let him know that whoever brings back a sinner from his wandering will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. Letting your yes be yes, prayer, rejoicing, or singing praise, confession, calling for the elders, going to a brother to turn them from their sin. These are transformed, wise, faithful ways that we are to use our words. So let's go back over the points we've made in kind of reverse order here. And I have to share with you that the proverb I started out with, it wasn't the whole thing. As the proverbs often do, they give this contrasting points here. The words of the wicked lie in wait for blood, but the mouth of the upright delivers them. So again, the answer isn't just avoid words that lie in wait for blood. We need to be people who, with our mouths, we deliver others. So, first of all, we said words reveal a hypocrite, but words also reveal an honest and sincere heart. In the heart of the book, James 3, verse 17, in talking about wisdom and describing what it is, he says, but the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy and good fruits, impartial and sincere. Is there anything more refreshing than a person who lives and speaks sincerely, who is the person that they purport to be? And hopefully more, right? If they're humble and aren't tooting their own horn, Their character goes deeper than you could have known by what they'd said. That's the power of Christ. If we want our words to do good rather than harm, we need to start by submitting to God and letting him teach us what true wisdom is, changing us from the inside out. In a room full of preachers, when I was over at the study in New York State earlier this week, and we're there to mostly preachers, and we're studying Psalms, and people have done all kinds of research, and there's all kinds of very insightful comments, and one brother makes a comment in the discussion about the seriousness of sin that was being highlighted by the Psalms. And he didn't have something deep and profound and insightful to share. What happened is that he was convicted by the discussion. Convicted by his own shortcomings. And he took the opportunity in a moment when it could be tempting as a preacher to make the memorable comment that people will talk about next year. He says, guys, man, I've not been taking sin as seriously as I should. And I need to confess. And he was specific, and he called it sin with us. he blessed us, and he used his speech. You don't know the character of any of those guys by the insightful things we said about from a commentary we read, or even from reading the Psalms day in and day out. But you did see something of his character in humbling himself in light of his own sin. And it was refreshing. So words can reveal an honest heart. Obviously, if he was out to show off his sincerity, then that would be defeating it. But they can reveal an honest heart. And just as words can bring unexpected harm, they can bring unexpected good. More good than you would have thought. You know, not all the images that James used were negative. The forest fire, it's pretty bad, unless it's a forest that needs to be coming down. But the horse is generally not a negative thing. It's a powerful, mighty beast. And we put this bit and this bridle, and you can guide that thing. I can't, but some people can guide that beast. I mean, that's amazing. It's beautiful. The good that can be done with simply blessing others with our words. There can be times in your life, out of your mouth, where you walk away from a difficult situation with a good conscience and saying, wow, Christ in me actually gave what was needed for the moment, what was appropriate for the moment, what was helpful for the moment, and that's all. Christ can use your words. I don't think I can count the regretful things I've said. But believe that Christ in you and in your brothers and sisters can leave you thankful for words carefully chosen and seasoned with salt for the moment. Proverbs 15, verse 13 says, "To make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good it is." Proverbs 25, verse 11 says, "A word fitly spoken is like apples of gold and a setting of silver." So don't in fear of judgment and in fear of causing a forest fire, don't think that you should never work to use your words well. Take care, bridle, control, but the bridle is meant to be used for a purpose, ultimately. So be changed and pilot that ship. I don't know all that's intended with that imagery, but you can go some places with that imagery. Just what stores of riches can you deliver for others and your relationships, your congregation, your workplace, and to the coming generations if we just learn to let Christ guide our words? I mentioned that brother who went through a divorce. After I grew up, found that he reconciled. He and his wife were able to reconcile. Do you think that required some healthy, carefully guided, thoughtfully guided words? It wasn't just that he learned to stop saying unhelpful things and hurtful things, but he learned to speak and to bless. I mean, a marriage can technically stay intact without that, but it is not going to be pleasing to God. So we need not only to watch our tongues and not say the wrong thing, but we need to say the right thing and mean it, of course. We said that self-promotion will be judged. We need to be careful about jumping to be teachers. But James doesn't just say, don't let many of you become teachers. We started with chapter 2, verse 12. So speak. So speak and so act as one who is going to be judged by the law of liberty. Where to speak? We're commanded to speak. There are those who hide their voices, and when they should know better. and fail to do great good. That's sinful. Just like saying the wrong thing is sinful, failing to say what's needed is wrong too. Exercise self-control, know your limits, so that God can use you to speak up in helpful ways. Use your voice to be a blessing and not a curse. James is talking about speech and words, and here he is writing this book, giving it to all these Christians because of the power of good that Christ-led words can do. So yeah, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all. But that's not enough. Do not remain silent. Tame your tongue in light of the coming judgment, in light of the dangers. But once it's under control, submitting to God, use it well. Let him change you from the inside out and be that refreshing fountain and bless others with your words.